Look, I'm not that bad, really. I don't know why I do the things I do. I guess it's because I love it. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review the most B-movie possible. The most B-film ever to have been made. Never Too Young to Die. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Where even to begin with this movie? Oh my gosh. Well, let's start with this. So, I had never heard of this movie until very recently. There's a YouTube channel I like watching called The Cobwebs Channel. And as the name suggests, this channel mostly focuses on horror movies, but the host of the channel, Daniel, he occasionally does these videos counting down or doing recommendations of action films, B films, nostalgic films, other things besides just horror. And recently he did a video running down a bunch of B cult classic action films. And I actually made a whole list off of the back end of that video of movies that I would like to do over here at some point. I had heard of a few of them, but this was one of the ones I had never heard of. So shout out to Daniel at the Cobwebs Channel for introducing me to this movie. And oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I was able to track this one down, and because my life is better having watched this movie. It's not good. Let's make that very clear. This movie is not a good movie, but it is. Never Too Young to Die is so unbelievable. You have to watch it to believe that it is true. You're going to listen to this whole review, and by the end of it, you're still not going to believe me that this is a real movie that was made at some point in history. And the good news for you all is that it is available for free on YouTube. You can find a link for it in the description of this episode. At the recording of this episode, that is the only way you can really see it. I think there is a rent option, maybe on Prime Video, but by and large, this movie is difficult to find on streaming. So check the link in the description of this episode to go check it out. This movie is a nice and tight 90 minutes, just like how I like it, folks. So it's an easy one to just throw on and watch. And without any further ado, let's just get into the wackiness that is Never Too Young to Die. So Never Too Young to Die was intended to be the start of a teen spy thriller franchise. The movie had an estimated $3 million budget and made almost $400,000. It was like $300,000 and change. So an absolute hardcore box office bomb. Nobody saw this movie. And you can tell that it obviously did not go well because there is no franchise. There is no franchise. It's not like you've heard of this movie ever before in your life prior to listening to this episode. It was intended to be the next big spy teen thriller franchise. Did so poorly at the box office that the plans were just ultimately scrapped. This film stars John Stamos in his film debut. He had done some TV prior to this point, and this movie comes out in 1986, which means we are 1 year away from the debut of Full House. Just imagine the alternate timeline where this movie is a box office success, becomes the next big spy teen franchise, and then what happens to the Full House? What happens? Does Stamos continue to do Full House for a bazillion seasons? I don't know. I don't know what happens there. So maybe it's for the best that this bombed. But yeah, we are 1 year away from Full House. This movie stars John Stamos, who this movie centers around the fact that his dad has been killed. And in light of his death, Stamos finds out that his dad was actually a spy. Now, the spy connection is pretty heavy-handed here. This movie is James Bond Jr., and it's very heavy-handed. Though he's not in the movie very long, George Lazenby plays John Stamos' dad, who famously, without having any acting experience whatsoever, replaced Sean Connery as James Bond in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is the one and only Bond film he ended up doing. So the James Bond Jr. allusions are evidently present here, seeing how James Bond is his implied dad in this movie. And the continued references, or maybe inspirations from James Bond, continues in this film as you see, if you're going to make a wannabe Bond film, you got to have a wannabe Bond girl. I'm going to walk that back a little bit, because actually it's a crying shame that Vanity, who plays our love interest here in this film, was never a Bond girl. Vanity is very hot. Let's just get that out of the way right off the bat. And in case you are unfamiliar with Vanity, she was an actress, model, singer with Motown, also known for her roles in The Last Dragon and Action Jackson. Pretty popular there in the 80s and 90s, especially in the B action film genre. And what's great about her role in this movie is that they are not shy for making her hot as hell in this movie, but they also do a really good job of establishing her as a badass, which we don't get badass Bond girls until Michelle Yeoh in Tomorrow Never Dies. Like, this is actually a little bit cutting edge, having a woman love interest in a spy film who can take care of herself, who is very competent, and also very attractive. Now, again, the movie is going to go way out of her way, out of their way to make her hot. There is a scene. I'm going to walk you through this, folks. There is a scene. So we're getting, this is the part where the inevitable is going to happen, and her and John Stamos are going to hook up. And so she is doing everything to seduce him. They're out on a sun deck, okay? And she's doing the very exaggerated removal of her clothing down to her bikini. Then she's sitting down to very slowly rub sunscreen on her legs. Then she's laid out and, you know, gets her bikini top off. And then for some strange reason, stands up and starts spraying herself with a garden hose. It suddenly becomes a GoDaddy commercial or a Carl's Jr. commercial from like the early 2000s. That part was very weird. Very weird. But all the while, John Stamos is standing there fighting the urge to give in to her while eating an apple. It is the most uncomfortable apple eating experience I have ever viewed in my life. One of those classic, like, when she stands up and reveals herself to him, he like drops the apple, you know, the whole bit. It's so cheesy. It's so, yeah. So obviously they're looking for every opportunity given to get Vanity down to very little clothing, but they also do a very good job of making her very competent. She knows what she's doing better than John Stamos, because he doesn't know his dad was a spy and is like learning how to do spy stuff on his own. He's capable, but not productive. I get he's capable but not useful through like the first half of the movie, as they're exploring this murder mystery plot of why was John Stamos's dad murdered. Eventually, it is revealed why. Actually, pretty quickly, we find out why John Stamos's dad was murdered. And that leads us to the villain of this movie. The villain of this movie is Velvet Von Ragnar, who is played by none other than Kiss star himself, Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is a drag queen in this movie. That he is the main villain for this film, and the reason why he kills Stamos's dad is because he had apprehended a disc that has a secret chemical compound information on it that Velvet wants to use to create a serum to poison the water supply of whatever town they're in. They never specify that. And with the help of his mad scientist counterpart, who's played by Robert Englund, this movie came out in between Nightmare on Elm Street 2 and 3. This is a little cameo role he has as a mad scientist who's developing this serum to poison the water supply. And so that way Velvet can hold the town hostage and get all this money and all this. And he has this, it's not a gang, it's not a crew. I swear it's like hundreds of people who are part of like the very stereotypically depicted alt-rock punk scene, who's like his army, like a literal army of people on his side to try and take over this town and hold it hostage and poison everybody. And Gene Simmons freaking rules in this role. He is awesome. He is the whole reason to watch this movie. And it's fascinating because, probably in part to the fact that this movie bombed so badly, Gene Simmons over the years has really distanced himself from this role. Whenever fans or interviewers bring it up, he usually says something along the lines of like, oh, I sucked in that movie, I can't believe you watched it, things like that, where genuinely he is acting-wise the best part of this movie. Robert Englund and George Lansby, they're not really in the movie very much, and Vanity is fine as an actress, and John Stamos, for whatever reason, seems like he's asleep for half the movie. He's like half asleep this entire movie for some reason. Like, wake up, Stamos. Gene Simmons, on the other hand, is like putting on the performance of a lifetime here. It is totally worth watching for his role. This, though, is probably a good time for me to talk about some of the instances in this movie where the 80s be the 80s, I guess, for lack of a better word, starting first and foremost with this character that Gene Simmons is playing. So Gene Simmons is doing drag in this movie, but to use modern terminology, the character is actually intersex, meaning that the character has both male and female reproduction organs. Okay, this is something that comes up a lot. Due to the fact that this movie comes out in the 80s, there is another term that is used in the movie. And on the advice of good counsel, I have been told that it's probably not best to continue to use this term and not best for me to say this term here. It starts with the letter H. It doesn't seem to carry the same weight as the F slur in the LGBTQIA community, but it does seem to be one of those terms that, like, it is for them to choose to use and not something that the general public, the straight white guys from the Midwest like myself, should just be flippantly using. So there's a bit of a datedness in terminology here. Again, intersex is the word that is going for. There's also the reality of the fact that this is a drag queen being used as the villain in the story, so kind of a demonization. The dialogue is never terrible or outright offensive, but there are some lines that do show that the characters that Stamos and Vanity are playing are kind of grossed out a little bit by Gene Simmons' appearance, the character's appearance in this film. There has been a lot of critique towards also the 80s being the 80s, the continued use of punk rock culture as this like this stereotypical depiction of punk rock culture as these like no morality, brain dead individuals who are just going to do whatever they want and are all just like hopped up on drugs. Like, this is definitely being shown here, and it's an outdated and also inaccurate stereotype of punk rock culture. Stamos has a line at one point that like, oh, they're just victims of society or something like that, real dramatic, and it's like, or not, they don't have to be. Like, maybe people do get into the punk scene because of disillusionment with culture, pop culture and society, but like, not 100% of the time. Like, yeah. And then there's the issue of the relationship between Stamos and Vanity. So in the real world, in real time, when this movie is made, John Stamos is in like his early 20s and Vanity is in her late 20s. So there's an age gap there, but nothing too drastic, like 5 years maybe. In the context of the movie, however, Stamos is in high school. He is playing a high school kid. And that is clearly established from the get-go. Vanity's age is never really established at any point. This isn't like Agent Cody Banks, where it's like, this is a, you know, training facility for future CIA operatives, but they're all, you know, middle school, high schoolers. Like, that's not the case here. Like, for all we can really tell, Stamos is a high schooler and Vanity is her actual age, which makes this a little icky, especially the hookup part. There's also the fact that Gene Simmons' character does hit on John Stamos at different points, and there's even a point where it looks like they are going to kiss, and Gene Simmons gives us a little tongue wiggle right beforehand. And truth be told, folks, I have never wanted to see two men kiss more in my life. That's not like a thing for me ever, but just like the pop culture idea of, oh my gosh, one time Gene Simmons kissed John Stamos, that would have been awesome. But I want to walk that back a little bit now, realizing that like Stamos is supposed to be a high schooler and Gene Simmons's character is supposed to be like a grown man. Again, the 80s be the 80s, and that's not okay, folks. We should have been doing better with some of these things. Now, those things aside, because those are not the reason why this movie bombed, unfortunately, this movie is just wildly entertaining and in other just like purely bad ways. There's times where it's hard to tell, and this is a classic example of a movie that is so bad it's good. Is times where it's hard to tell if the movie is trying to be funny or if it really is just that bad. For example, Stamos's dad allegedly, so he gets captured, and allegedly he's got this disc that Gene Simmons wants on him, and he goes to reach into his jacket to get it, and Gene Simmons is like, oh no, I want my men to retrieve it from you. And he's like, okay, left breast pocket, and the guy reaches into the right, like very clearly he's reaching to the right. That's funny. that is a funny moment. I don't know if it's a goof or what, but it's funny. Another example is when we're first introduced to Vanity. So she's in a stable. She had just got done riding a horse when all of a sudden some of these punk rock baddies show up to like beat her up, kill her, whatever, try to find this disc. And she gets a gun, and you know, they're shooting at each other the whole bit. Eventually, some, like, I think it's like gasoline or paint thinner cans, they get hit, and so like a little fire starts, and it's a stable, so there's hay, so the fire starts to spread, and it spreads directly towards a box labeled grenades. That's funny. Like, that is comically bad. Or Maybe it was intentional. Maybe it was supposed to be funny. I don't know. It's so hard to tell. Another example. So, and this one isn't as funny as much as it is like, this doesn't just doesn't add up whatsoever. So, like I said, about through the first half of the movie, John Stamos is like capable, but pretty useless. Like he's constantly kind of dropping the ball on things. He ends up also getting captured. And two of the punk rockers are like beating the tar out of him, smashing his head repeatedly into a sink, throws him into a bookcase. They start whipping him. And for whatever reason, he's taking zero damage. He's taken zero fall damage from any of this. Like he should be dead by this point. The sink bashing should have been enough. But yet he's got a little bit of blood on his face and that is it. And he snaps. He's going to finally stand up for himself. Now, earlier on, right when we're first introduced to John Stamos, he is shown to be a high school gymnast. He actually learned some gymnastics so that way he could do these scenes. He's doing a trampoline routine, and he also does a ring routine very briefly in the movie. So I'm thinking, okay, so this is going to be like a gymkata or, like ninja things that I do situation. I'm thinking this fight scene is going to turn into some kind of backflip kicks and round off back handsprings to transition between bad guys. You know, it's just like some like silly, obviously very silly, but some like gymnastics inspired combat. Nope. He just knows karate now for no unexplained reason. I think he does like a wall flip at one point, but other than that, there's no gymnastics involved whatsoever. And it's like, why did you have him be a gymnast if you're not gonna like have his combat style be even remotely inspired? I would rather it be the cheesiness of he does like gymnastic martial arts versus he can do gymnastics. But also he does karate for some reason too. As I said, Never Too Young to Die is a movie that has to be seen in order to be believed. And although Gene Simmons has throughout his career distanced himself from the movie and buried his character, John Stamos, I came across this quote from him and I'll read it to you all. In retrospect on the film, he said this: "It's the perfect midnight movie where people can come and dress up. It's, what's the term I'm looking for? The best, worst thing you will ever see." So clearly, John Stamos has the right idea behind this movie. And yeah, maybe this movie needs the Rocky Horror Picture Show or the Room treatment and have like interacting things you do with the story and people come dressed up and the whole bit. Maybe that is something that needs to happen for Never Too Young to Die. Would I watch this movie again? Yes, I would. Because like John Stamos said, it's a pretty good late night watch. Would I buy a physical media copy of the movie? Seeing how difficult it is to track it down, it's not readily available on streaming. I feel like the safe answer is yes, though I don't necessarily feel like I need to have this in my collection. I was surprised. I figured this would be some kind of like, I'm gonna have to find a VHS copy of it, but I did see you can buy DVDs of it on Amazon. So it did get a DVD release at some point, and there are still copies available out there, and it's like $15, I think. But yeah, Never Too Young to Die. You gotta see it to believe it, folks. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this movie wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend, and make sure you check out the other shows here on the Anazao Podcast Network, like Page and Pixel, Systematic Ecology, and my sister show, My Seminary Life. You can follow this show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. Thanks again for listening. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.